listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician.
Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 52 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition of the podcast is Robert. Robert, how you doing?
Hello, hello.
And that's it. Quiet chair over there is Chris. He's played a show in Bellingham last night, so he couldn't make it.
Apparently, he's got to do some real musician-like things, so just the two of
what
us today.
A loser. Chris was hoping to make it back in time, but as things go, when you're on the road, you don't tend to get up as early as you had planned.
Exactly.
And they're driving through Seattle, and I'm sure they'll get hung up in traffic, and so we just figured we'd press on. The show must go on.
That's right.
So how have things been going with you, Robert?
Oh, pretty good. We just rolled out the new version of the Host Baby Wizard. I know I probably mentioned before that I work for Host Baby, which is our web hosting division at CD Baby. And that's been exciting. Lots of new features and a few bugs here and there that we're working out. But our clients are really excited about it. And if you haven't checked out Host Baby, you should definitely check it out, hostbaby.com.
Yeah, it's been quite an overhaul that's been going on there, and it looks really nice.
And more to come. We've got lots of new features on the way besides the ones we just added.
So. Yeah. If you haven't been to cdbaby.com in a while or been following the news that's been going on with CD Baby, we have lots of changes in the works, things that are very exciting. So we're all very busy outside of podcast land. So.
Yeah.
But it's a good busy. It's a good busy.
Still managed to pick up the guitar now and again.
That's right. Well, my head's kind of spinning because I just got done listening to another podcast. David Hooper, who's a longtime CD Baby friend who does music business radio. Mm-hmm. I just listened to an interview he did with Seth Godin, marketing guy, guru.
Yeah, I read his blog before. He always has really good sort of marketing advice and stuff like that.
Yeah, and a lot of it's applicable to music, but this particular interview was geared towards music. And I know Derek always talked about Seth and actually interviewed him once on some big conference. I forget which one it was down in San Francisco. And I know Derek was really excited about that. But this interview was really good. And there was a couple themes running throughout that and a couple other things I've been hearing lately that's kind of shaping away some of my thoughts on where things are headed. And
oh, interesting.
But you'll be hearing about it on the podcast in the coming weeks, so I'm not going to spoil it here. So.
Damn, I was excited there. I haven't listened yet, but I'll have to check it out.
Well, there's that, and then my friend's blog post that I read recently, and then an artist that I'm actually interviewing for the podcast coming up, that there was a similar theme going throughout all these inadvertently, was just kind of made me go, huh, okay. So
things that make you go, huh?
Yeah. So it'll be revealed to you slowly. You're more than welcome to send me your theories of what it is, but this isn't the Lost podcast. So, all right. Well, let's get into the news for the week.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
So here's some headlines that caught my attention. Third Man Records, the imprint on which Jack White releases all his music, including the White Stripes and the Raconteurs, now has a physical location in downtown Nashville. White's new Third Man Records building serves as the company's headquarters and houses the label's offices, plus a vinyl record store, photo studio, darkroom, and performance stage. To quote Jack White, if one of the bands working here says, Jack, there's a great band that played at The End, which is a club in Nashville, on Friday night, you should check these guys out. Saturday morning, they can come to Third Man Studios and we can cut a couple of songs. They can come back to the photo studio and we can take a photo of them. We can cut the acetate and run it down the block, and within 3 weeks, we can have 1,000 copies of the 45 that they can sell at their shows.
I mean, he says 45. He's talking about vinyl.
Vinyl, yeah. Yes, vinyl. So it'll be interesting to see if this is a new type of record label model that's sustainable moving forward. Well, in other news, things keep heating up with in the world of Ticketmaster. Nine Inch Nails' Trent Reznor commented saying, "Nothing's going to change until the ticketing entity," that's a tongue twister.
Ticketing entity?
The ticketing entity gets serious about stopping the problem, which of course they don't see as a problem. "The ultimate way to hurt scalpers is to not support them. Leave them holding the merchandise. Don't buy from scalpers and be suspect of artists singing the praises of the Live Nation Ticketmaster merger. What's in it for them?" he says. Of course, this comes on the heels of questions into Ticketmaster and the allegations of them facilitating scalping to their ticket reseller partners. NPD Group, a consumer research company, released some interesting numbers about social networks and music. And here are some of those facts, or some of their findings, I should say. 19% of those surveyed said they listened to music through social networking sites, up 4% from a year ago. Almost half of U.S. teens listened to music on social networks, up 37% in 2007. Among college-age fans, the percentage rose to 41%, 30% the previous year. The decline of CD purchases was most prevalent among teens and consumers 50 and over. The number of people purchasing digital music increased by more than 8 million in 2008 to 36 million. And many consumers said they were spending less on entertainment as a result of the recession. And many said they were turning to digital downloads as a way to buy individual tracks rather than having to purchase an entire album. So some interesting numbers there.
Yeah.
In big artist news, the Counting Crows have parted ways with their label, and as of now, plan to join the ranks of the DIY indie crowd. The band had some interesting quotes. 18 years ago, when Counting Crows signed our first record contract, we were an unknown band signed to DGC, the cool indie-flavored boutique label of Geffen Records. Our label mates were Sonic Youth, The Posies, Nirvana, The Sundays, and That Dog, to name a few. Bands knew each other, played on each other's records, toured together. It was a dream environment to be a musician, even for that time. DGC disappeared except as the logo on our records, and Geffen became one of many labels under a much larger conglomerate. A lot of people think it's a tough time to be a band, but we don't feel that way. The internet opens a world of limitless possibility where the only boundaries are the boundaries of your own imagination. We want a chance to push those boundaries back as far as we can. We all want what's best for everyone, which is why we've decided to part ways. We'll be watching to see what happens with Counting Crows moving forward from this point.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to start listening to this podcast now that they're a big label doing
it
for them.
I know. all the indies out there who've been doing it on their own are going to have a leg up on the Counting Crows.
Yeah, that's true.
You can open for us, buddy.
That's right. Welcome to the world of doing it yourself.
Exactly.
So I'll see if I can slide them a couple episodes of the podcast to help them get on their feet.
Excellent.
I'm sure they're
Excellent.
Having a tough time.
Yeah.
So. I thought the Third Man Records thing, the Jack White from the White Stripes and the Raconteurs was very interesting because it almost seemed like things had come full circle. That sounded kind of like, you know, back in the era of like Motown or whatever, where they
totally.
Had a physical location. People, you know, they're now tourist locations, you know, and people would go by, they would have kind of this brand identity just by the label and kind of all in one. Deal, you know, they had the band members that played on all the albums and stuff like that, and
so we're almost recording and cutting a record are the same thing, you know, something that, you know, I think there's so much these days that they put, you know, so much emphasis put on production and post-production and bringing in musicians, but just the idea of just like get the band in there, play their songs and cut a record, you know, like.
So then, to me, it was also very interesting that this was happening in Nashville, because I lived in Nashville from 92 to off and on till 2000, and Nashville was not a rock and roll town, to say the least, and
yeah.
I seen a band like the White Stripes, and I know the rest of the people in the Raconteurs, or at least a few of them actually live in L.A., and but it's kind of interesting to see them set up shop in Nashville.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I expected to see when I went to Nashville and heard of Music Row and stuff like that. And, you know, it was very different than what I was used to coming from San Diego and the Southern California vibe. But so it'd be interesting to see how it goes for them there. And if anyone is in Nashville listening, which I know we have some listeners in Nashville, I'd like to hear your report. Maybe stop by, see their little vinyl store, and see if it's all hype or if it's really going on like they say.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, definitely.
So then Nashville may actually emerge as a rock and roll town. The last thing I want to mention was some of those social networking numbers from that NPD group who does the consumer research. The one thing that was interesting is, you know, the decline in CD purchases was most prevalent among teens and consumers 50 and over. I don't know if you can really take that 50 and over demographic into account. I mean,
it's probably just more likely they're less interested in music or they can't hear as well.
Or eventually we do die.
Yeah.
Not many 101-year-olds stocking up on CDs.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a very strange
But statistic. I think the teens, that's probably the most interesting demographic, that there's less of them buying CDs. But, you know, the numbers of people discovering music through social networks is increasing, and a lot of reports been talking about that. So if you're still holding on, refusing to jump in to the pool with everyone else in the social network pool, you need to get in there. Start with, I would say at this point, you might want to start with Facebook as opposed to MySpace, because I think there's a whole way of Facebook and Twitter and how people communicate using those. It's different than the way MySpace was originally set up. And so it kind of gets you thinking in a different way where things are headed. So definitely get in there. It's time.
Get your feet wet if you haven't already.
Which, that's a perfect transition into what I wanted to say. I had a couple Twitter stories.
Oh, yeah?
Before we get into our episode recap, I had a couple Twitter stories about some things that happened this past week that I thought were good examples of how useful Twitter can be. Mm-hmm. And if you're not using Twitter or haven't really quite figured out how it could be useful, I thought these might help. So last week, I was just here at work, you know, and I found a very cool tool for managing multiple Twitter accounts across multiple users, and it's called Hootsuite, H-O-O-T Suite, S-U-I-T-E.com.
Is that something you can download for free?
Yep, it's free, and it's not something you download. It's actually a web you used on the web.
Oh, okay.
But there's multiple Twitter users here for CD Baby, myself being one of them, and we have five different accounts at this point. And if you want to check out the CD Baby main account, it's just username CD Baby. And so I found this cool tool, and I'm like, wow, it took me a long time and a lot of work to discover this. So I put a post on Twitter, like, if you're managing multiple accounts, use this tool.
Right.
Instantly, somebody, one of our listeners in the band called The Dundies, messaged me back saying, I only use Twitter from a phone, so I use Tweety.
Right.
And I said, oh, okay. On my phone, I use Twitter phone.
Uh-huh.
And somebody from another band who listens to the podcast, I believe they listen to the podcast, a band called Georgia Wonder, they're in the UK, they immediately messaged me back saying, I've used all of the different ones for the phone, and Tweety is by far the best. And
oh, so nice.
I immediately went on the iTunes App Store and found Tweety. It costs like $1.99, and I bought it. And so it's
kind of... I might have to check that out. I think I've got TwitPhone or
Twitter phone's what you
Twitter had. Phone, and then I had another one too that I tried, both of which were not the perfect app for me yet. So maybe the...
And I have to say this one was by far, they were right. And so, but I thought it was interesting, just within a matter of minutes, it had gone from someone in Florida, because the Dundies are in Florida, they got back to me, and then I responded, and someone from the UK responded, and then within a matter of minutes, I purchased something.
You know, I mean, that's really useful, and I think it's interesting because we think of having like all the information we need at our fingertips, but what we don't have, I mean, you can Google like best Twitter application, but you're not necessarily going to get the answer you want. But if you're a musician and you use Twitter and you want to know from other musicians, like with the best Twitter application, is you suddenly have like access to these people who have experience and have a more specific kind of knowledge that you have access to. You know, I mean, that's the kind of the great thing about building a social network, not just in Twitter, but in anything, is that like if you sort of have access to all these other experienced people.
Well, in both these bands, I follow on Twitter as well. And so I know they use Twitter a lot. So I know when they tell me, like that one band said, this is by far the best, I've tried them all, I know that they're probably right, because instead of just doing a blind search online, there's also other things. It's become useful, you know, just for asking general questions and getting useful information back, you know, maybe not necessarily related to Twitter like that one was. But and that leads me to my second story. You know, I'm not at South by Southwest this year, sadly. I'm most sad because of the weather.
That's right. Really, yeah, that's no kidding.
Just wanting some sun, warm sun break. But at the Music Discovery podcast, which we do here at CD Baby, last episode we did, we had post-rock on there. And I had mentioned on the podcast that this is one of my favorite subgenres. I actually tinker with that myself, mm-hmm. with what I do. And we had a listener comment on our blog for that show. And he listed a whole bunch of other bands. And I commented back saying, oh, I hadn't heard of that. Well, he's heard of some of those bands. Well, he started following me and something happened. I can't remember exactly how it went, but he Twittered, hey, that band is playing right now on Woxy.com, which is a radio station at uh-huh. South by Southwest. Check it out. So I immediately turned it on.
Oh, that's cool.
And then it was really cool. So I retweeted it and all these other people started retweeting it. And then the funny thing was later in the day, the band started following me. So it was just kind of on Twitter. It was kind of weird. So and just how information can spread and how, you know, this person that knew I liked that band found something. And it wasn't like I said, hey, does anyone know where they're playing? It's just like, oh, I know this person likes this band.
Yeah,
I'm gonna turn them on. And it was really cool because there was all this, it was live interview and live in the studio performances. And
how cool for a music fan to suddenly be followed by one of the groups that they're a fan of.
Yeah, know? Yes.
I mean, it's just, I mean, especially if you're Twittering, you know, think about that. Think about how people who, you know, are a part of your audience might be kind of flattered by you taking an interest in their world.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I don't know if it was something that was automatic or if, you know, a lot of bands, and I do this for the podcast and CD Baby, I have some keywords set up so when people are talking about it, I know, and that way I can jump in and talk to them. But, yeah, it's just kind of cool how that whole thing happened really fast again, where somebody gave me some information that I found useful, and then I spread it to a bunch of people that follow me that also found it useful, and we all got to enjoy a cool band. And it just kind of showed to me how, if you understand how Twitter works and use it right, it's not about shameless self-promotion, but it's about sharing information that's useful to the people that follow you. And if a bunch of people that are following you are fans of your music, then of course you're going to share information that they're going to want to hear.
Right.
But it's also an open dialogue, a two-way communication, and that's important to remember. And that way people will want to keep following you and want to keep interacting with you. So,
I recently became a fan of Christopher Walken's Twitter posts.
It's been getting a lot of talk in the Twitter world.
And he's C. Walken on Twitter, and he's great. And I just remember this one, and he's great because he's really good at one-liners, basically, you know, just like little fun quips about his day. And some of them are weird and some of them are hilarious. And he's creating real dynamic content, you know, that's yeah. interesting to read. You can obviously don't always have to be funny or entertaining or poetic or whatever, mm-hmm. but like definitely adding some of that to your tweets could do some wonders for you. And one of the things that he said that I thought was so hilarious is he was like, I went out today to buy a $50 bag of dog food for a dog that only eats extension cords. I guess that's cheaper than a bag of extension cords.
So obviously, Christopher Walken, kind of, you have a bigger picture of who he is, so you kind of have this image of him saying it, but following people like that is very useful and entertaining. Yep. Yep. So I had three quick tips before we get into our episode recap of that I think people that now that you've, most of our listeners have been getting their feet wet in Twitter and getting a little bit experience under the belt, that here's some more tips. One is to ask relevant questions of your followers. Two, participate in the conversation. Three, share relevant information, links, photos, video. And if you do those three things, you'll see your follower numbers grow. You'll see increased interaction between you and your followers. And you'll enjoy it a lot more. And you'll understand how it's become such a useful form of communication. Well, let's get into the recap of last week's episode where I talked to Greg Perret. And Greg was a very cool guy.
Yeah.
Very, very calm. And I think you have to be calm to be the guitar player on a TV show like Dancing with the Stars, because there wasn't hours and hours of rehearsal going into those performances, and it can be intense, I'm sure. And with what they're doing, it kind of has the added element. It's not like they're just a house band on like the Tonight Show or something, playing bumper music and occasionally playing along with the guests or whatever. That would be easy because, you know, you're just doing your thing. They have to perform with the dancers who, you know, one of them is not a professional and is extremely nervous and could throw a wrench in what they're doing with
definitely,
the music.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, you know, if the late night show, like somebody hits the wrong key or the wrong cymbal or at the wrong time, it's not going to throw somebody's dance step off, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, they make a joke about it. If you watch those shows enough, sometimes you see them all looking at each other and you know they're top of their game so they can recover, but you know something happened that wasn't supposed to. But yeah, when you're playing for some live dancers, I mean that's a lot of pressure. And the one thing that I've played on live television a couple times, and it is the most awkward thing ever because it is so quiet. And the audience is just kind of sitting there staring at you, you know, because they're not at a rock show. They feel like they're kind of at a formal presentation.
Right, right. They don't want to make too much noise.
You know, it's just the most bizarre thing. It's hard to hear yourself. And man, so being able to perform at the top of your game under the most awkward feeling situation, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah, he's very professional. One of the things that really stood out, I think, for me about that interview was when he was talking about sort of the lists of people that these producers think about when they go to fill a slot, you know, and it sounded like the way he was talking was like, yeah, like I know this X amount of musicians and, you know, these are the five guys that I know that can do this kind of music pretty well. And this guy's working on a project, so I'm going to pick this guy. You know, like a very sort of informal process, even for probably a really well-paying gig.
Yeah.
Like, because there is just sort of this community that these guys have, you know, made a name for themselves and also just been social enough and connected enough that they're the people that pop up on that list when that producer is looking for somebody.
Yeah, right? And I saw that when I was living in Nashville, going to college, like a lot of the people I was in school with at the time that knew each other and were kind of moving towards trying to be session players in town and working, like starting out working on songwriter demos and then working their way up to working on, you know, bigger albums and maybe, you know, a feature country release album.
Right.
A lot of those people kept working together and through that whole process together because it's like, you know, I know these three guitar players that I've worked with in college, they're great. So now that I'm working in demo studios for songwriters, I'll keep working with them and
totally.
That person gets better. And so it's definitely, like you said, about who you know and getting connected. And it's not something where I would say you just jump in your car and drive down to the big, you know, well-known studio in town. You got to get in. You got to get in where, you know, meet some people, start expanding your working relationships, your musical circle of friends, expanding those, and you'll start to see more opportunities happen. Not only with if you're trying to pursue music as a player, but as a band or an artist as well. I mean, if you only know two artists in town, I mean, the chances of you getting asked to be on a slot with them somewhere is going to be a little more remote, where if you know 20 different artists really well, there's a good pool of people that might be looking to hook up for shows. So
definitely.
So it's always good to know people and spend time networking. But if you're interested in trying to get, you know, if you're an artist and you're like, I'd like to start making some money, may being a player. One place you might want to look in your town for some advice and some help of, as to what's going on in your town is the Musicians Union. They can plug you in with some people. Usually, if you're in a decent-sized town, they'll have a good pulse on a few projects that are in the works, especially things that are like television is always a union gig. So
yeah.
So that's going to be reported to the Musicians Union. And there are some things in towns that, in your town, that if you're not in LA, Nashville, or New York, or Seattle, that might have some sort of thing like a TV show or something going. There are some things that you may want to, you know, explore, think outside the box. I noticed here in Portland, I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, they've been using local bands to help promote the Blazers, which is our NBA basketball team.
Oh yeah, that's right, you said that.
And so I've seen on some commercials where they've had a local band playing, you know, live, like, you know, on the commercial, and then they put their little logo there, and I've seen some sports teams actually employ a band to play at the shows, and you know, some cover songs and stuff in between.
People love things. Music. I mean, and you know, too, like, I mean, Portland's such a restaurant town, but if you live in a place that has a vibrant, like, food community, like restaurants are small, struggling businesses a lot of the time, and they're looking to bring in crowds, and, you know, musicians will often do that. So, if, you know, approach, you know, see if you can't get a regular gig playing at a restaurant. Some, I mean, I know there's this place called the Laurel Thirst that does, they do like 4 hours of music like most weeknights, I think, and I think the musicians get paid pretty well.
Right. And I've said it on the podcast before, and I'll say it again, there's a big difference between wanting to be somebody who's famous and wanting to be somebody who can make a living from music. And it doesn't mean if you're making money from your playing music that you can't release albums and promote them and play as a band and do that. But, you know, I'd rather play my guitar and get paid than make lattes.
Yeah.
Which totally. I've done before.
Totally. As well as I. I mean, but there, you know, there is that sort of, I feel like there's that kind of fear. I can't remember which writer was saying this, but like there was a writer who was talking about writing, and he was like, you know, stick to your art and don't become a teacher. Don't become, you know, don't become a newspaper writer if you want to be a novel writer, you know? And I think there's sometimes that fear with musicians too, is that like, if I just become a player, if I just become a studio musician, that's all I'm ever going to be. And I need to just shoot for the big time and work making lattes.
And if that's the route you choose, that's fine. But right. I think a lot of artists get sucked into that line of thinking just because, and don't realize, because there are some benefits. If you're working as a player, and even if you're just, you know, you have the talent to get in at a low level, because it will take some serious talent.
Yeah.
You know, there is the ability to become a huge famous artist and have less playing ability. I mean, there's plenty of bands. The list is long that we could say they're not that great at their instrument.
Right.
But, you know.
But they're great entertainers.
Yeah, or they wrote a song that just connected with people. So there is a level of talent that's needed to get in on that kind of this kind of work, and Greg mentioned it in the interview that, you know, you got to deliver.
Yeah.
So I mean, the benefit of that though is when you're pushed like that, you will see your abilities grow exponentially. I mean, just when you, because you're going to put yourself way outside of your comfort zone, you're going to do things as a player, maybe explore some styles that, you know, you may like but don't really care to play that much, or wouldn't play for the music you're writing. Right. But it will improve your skills as a musician, and you'll see ultimately it will have great benefit to the music that you write and perform yourself.
Definitely.
So that's something to consider, and you know, it's a good challenge. And but you had a comment from, is it from Chris Huff?
Yeah, I do. This is from the website, from cdbabypodcast.com, and Chris Huff says that he liked the show, and that as a musician whose bread and butter is solo acoustic cover gigs, it's great to hear the tale of a working session cat in LA. His advice to people is to learn as many songs as possible by old, new, borrowed, and blue artists. Another good thing he says is to go deep into the catalogs of relatively mainstream artists. For example, if you play the Kinks' Lola and someone likes it, you can blow their mind by playing Ape Man or Waterloo Sunset. And this strategy has gotten him, he says, like a lot of great gigs. He goes on to say, you always get more tips when you focus on playing songs that you truly love. Sure, you have to slip in Margaritaville every once in a while, but the harsh, unexpected, unforgiving bar crowd will respect you if you wail the crap out of Message in a Bottle. If you hate all music that wasn't written for you personally, then you need to find another way to make a living. For those of us with big record collections and a great love of many different genres, artists, and styles, this can be a great way to avoid the day gig.
And he mentions that he's does it full-time pretty much, that his wife still has a job, but it helps pay the bills and it's his full gig. And I've talked to Chris over Twitter several times, and so yeah, he's actually out there doing it. And there's so many people that are resistant to that idea. You know, if it's facilitating your music career, I mean, because I'm sure he writes music of his own and is able to make records. And yeah, so if you're a working musician, an artist who's found a way to support their music habit by actually playing music, and you want to chime in, please feel free. You can leave a comment on the show notes like Chris did, or you can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can call our listener line at 206-426-5683. So speaking of the listener line, we've got some great calls, and let's get to them right now.
CD Baby Podcast.
Message line.
206-426-5683.
The number you have dialed.
206-426-5683.
Hey guys, it's Jacob Moon calling you from Canada. I just thought I'd give a call here to encourage you that the podcast is sounding great, and congratulations that we're doing 50 already. That's amazing. I've learned a lot from listening to your podcast, and I thought I'd share some stuff that I've learned just in my own career. Somebody encouraged me a long time ago to take whatever natural resources you have in your catalog, in your library, and find as many uses for them as possible. And so I took a cover version that I did of a Rush song called Subdivisions, and I recorded it on my last live album. But I thought maybe we could do something more with it, and so I shot a video, really kind of a creative video of me performing the song acoustically on the roof of a local theater just as the sun was setting. And I kind of did some fun things with it. I used two guitars and did some live looping. And anyways, I put that up on YouTube, and wouldn't you know it, that's thousands of people, 44,000 people now have seen it in a couple of months, which is basically due to the fact that Rush fans are crazy and they love anybody who covers their favorite band. But it's kind of fun to see it take off, and it's led to a lot of sales of downloads and CDs that I wouldn't have otherwise had. So my latest CD called The Loop has been selling really well on CD Baby, which is fun to see. And I just it just reminds me that if you take what you've already created and try to create as many more things out of that as you possibly can, and not only that, but to cover a song that people like, and you might get those people to like you as well. So anyways, guys, have a great great show, and thank you very much for all the wisdom through the years, and keep it up in the future. Take care.
Hey, webcasters, Lem Genovese, live and direct from La Crosse, Wisconsin's Yankee Mythic Records. One of the biggest mistakes I made was to blindly send out CDs and promo packs instead of a cover letter, and having a really good website with live videos as well as free downloads. The increase on my business has been enough that I know I made a huge mistake by just sending out promo packs with CDs blind. Best of luck to all you CD Baby product people out there, and keep up the good work. Bye.
So that was our first grouping of calls, and really appreciated Jacob Moon. his comments, and it was kind of what we were talking about in a couple episodes ago about just seeing yourself as a content creator. He was saying, hey, I've got this music sitting here. Why don't I release it? Why don't I do a video with it? Especially with cover songs. If you've got recorded versions of cover songs, get them out there, especially on YouTube. That's what a lot of artists are doing that are getting them some attention on YouTube, people searching for videos, especially since a lot of the bigger names don't have their content up on those places, that it's an easy way for you to get noticed. And
We love those YouTube stories too. Bring them on. If it's just so cool the way some musicians have used online video to promote their career.
Yeah, and we definitely want to hear more about video, because it's something where I honestly am a bit lacking, and just because, like we've talked about, there's a lot of stuff to know about out there, and I have not dabbled in YouTube much, just because if I'm making something, I'm hoping I'm making music. And and the other caller, he didn't mention his name, I don't think, but it's never a good idea to just send out a lot of stuff blindly. You'll have better results if you find out first if they accept unsolicited material. In certain areas, I would say go ahead and send it anyway, but depending on what you're trying to do, it's always good to kind of build a relationship with the person first before you send out stuff.
Yeah.
So let's get to the second group of callers.
Hey there, Kevin and handsome Robert and others. This is Matthew Ebel from MatthewEbel.com, and I just caught your 50th episode. Congratulations on hitting the big 5-0, by the way. You had mentioned you were looking for stories from artists about how to get regular, reliable income in this day and age, and especially in this economy. Well, the key thing that I'm working on right now is MatthewEbel.net. Not .com, that's my main website. MatthewEbel.net is a subscription website. It's like a premium fan club. Every single month, I have promised my subscribers one new live concert recording. That's over an hour of live music recording every single month, and at least two new studio recordings every single month. Now, I have thousands of people on my mailing list, but only about 1% of them have decided that they're going to want to support, they're going to want to buy everything that I put out. The thing is, that 1% is now paying my rent, because they are sending me a regular monthly subscription payment via PayPal. Some of them have even gone so far as to sign up annually. So they laid down the entire year's subscription right up front. That's how much they believe in my music. Now, I'm pretty sure there are other artists out there who have fans that want to support them in a similar fashion. And the best part is, since it is a monthly subscription, it's regular income. You can look at how many subscribers you currently have and say, okay, I'll be able to afford this much top ramen or this much macaroni and cheese next month. So it's pretty comforting. Now, it's not paying all of my bills, but like I said, it's paying my rent, and this service has only been around since October. So if you want some more information, just go over to MatthewEbel.net, and here's a little bonus for the CD Baby podcast listeners. If you want to sign up for my All Access Pass, which will get you the live recordings and the new music every single month, use coupon code CDBaby50, that's CDBaby50, and that'll give you one free month of the All Access Pass, so you can actually see how this works. And of course, if you want to get in touch with me, just go to MatthewEbel.net/contact, and I'll be happy to talk some artists through how to set something like this up for their own fans. Anyway, love the show, keep up the good work, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Hey everyone, it's CD Baby DIY Podcast. This is Ron from Rifus, RifusBand.com out of Miami, long-time listener. Just saying that one note about rehearsals, you should always be prepared if you got software and computers and lighting systems and sound like we do. You can't do what I did last week and spend an hour fixing a problem. Prepared in the meantime. So you guys complained in the latest podcast about never calling from a rehearsal. Well, we're definitely at rehearsal.
Well, thanks for those phone calls. And Matthew Ebel, who has the subscription service, I've actually been curious about it. He's been a longtime listener, and he actually sent me a message by Twitter, saying, If the promo code thing's too over the top, just cut that off.
We let it slide this time, but don't everybody start adding their promo codes to the phone calls.
But I let it slide because Matthew has been a longtime listener of the podcast, contributes regularly, and I know he isn't just, I thought the information was useful.
The information is very useful.
So therefore, that's how you get through and get a little shameless self-promotion in. But he has been doing a subscription side, and like he said, it's paying his rent. It's not making him rich, but it's paying his rent, and it's just getting a small fraction of your followers and developing content for them, which is what a big part of that Seth Godin interview was that talking about that I
really?
Mentioned at the top. So,
okay.
So there's a connection
around
there. Yeah. And so Matthew is, you know, creating that content and building content for these supporters, and it's paying off some. And so he made that promo code if anyone was wanting to log in and see how it works, which is helpful if you're an artist and want to try a subscription side to see, get in there and poke around. So check that out.
I think it would be really hard, especially in these economic times, to convince people to set aside a portion of their monthly income for music like that, you know, like...
Well,
hard to convince me to do that.
Well, and I that's a good point, but
yeah.
You know, as I think about the economy, there's a lot of people hurting right now, but there's a lot of people doing better than ever right now.
Right.
And I'm not talking about the people getting bonuses at AIG. You know, there's always somebody who's doing very well. I mean,
right.
Not 100% of the people are unemployed, you know.
Right, right.
So
I think people are a little bit more reluctant to spend money.
Well, and he said in his message, it wasn't 100%, it wasn't 50%,
right.
It was 1% of his email list. So,
I mean, the fact that he's doing it, it's proof in the pudding. I mean, but again, you're going to have to have a pretty dedicated following in order to convince them.
Yeah,
to
it's
do
not
that.
Something that, you know, that my band that's just getting off the ground, Hello Morning, could do. It'd be like my mom would be subscribing. So
yeah.
It'd be like, I'll just come over for dinner on Friday night. How about that? I'll play guitar for you. But yeah, he's been doing it for a while, has built up a big email list and some dedicated followers. And so that's something that, you know, he's able to take to the next level. And when you have a big email list and some dedicated followers, 1% can be quite a bit.
Definitely, definitely.
So check that out. It's interesting to see. I know some other artists are trying that whole subscriber side, and it's something that I've only seen really in the indie side of things. There's mainstream artists that have tried things like that, but I've seen it happening more with indie artists lately. So that's it for this edition of the DIY Musician Podcast. We will catch you next week with another interview, and the following week, Chris will be back, and Robert will as well.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.